is gone. Bank of Canada takes silver PMO. Pierre barricades himself in Stornoway.
Dan, wake up.
Whoa. Sorry, I must have dozed off. I just had the weirdest dream. I dreamt that Mark Carney and the Liberals actually won the federal election, and Jagmeet and Pierre Poilievre lost their seats, and then Poilievre refused to step down as leader. That's crazy.
Wow. How long have you been asleep? That all happened. How can you not know this?
Well, the election was really stressful and so crazy, what with the Liberals doing their best Walking Dead impression and all, and I guess I just blacked out. But I had another dream as well.
Another dream?
Yeah, this one was so real. I dreamt that we finally got to interview Will Arnett on the podcast. And it was such a great episode. We became podcast superstars. And there was a bidding war by the streaming services to host Negan and the Lone Ranger. And Spotify signed us to a seven-figure deal. And
Dan, wake the hell up.
what? No Will Arnett? No Spotify deal?
Nope. Dan, you got to realize that sometimes a dream is just a dream.
The Winnipeg Free Press proudly presents, in partnership with CJNU 93.7 FM, Negan and the Lone Ranger. Here are your hosts, Negan Sinclair and Dan the Lone Ranger Lett.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Negan and the Lone Ranger. This one, you might have noticed there was a bit more of a gap between episodes. And it wasn't really because I was asleep the whole time, although the people who know me best know that that might be a possibility. But I guess we just, what would you say? We needed time to repair our brains?
I thought to repair our relationship. I thought we needed time apart because it was so intensive and that election was so hard.
I thought you and I, our relationship, how many times on this podcast have I been adopted? So,
Well, that's the problem is family fights are the worst fights.
yeah, as I'm learning, family fights are the worst fights. But, and you've been well in during our hiatus.
I've been well. I've been traveling far too much, and of course, my heart's been in Manitoba when watching all the terrible things on television and all of my relatives. And I have people coming in and out of my house who are displaced from the fires. If you are listening to this from very far away, maybe overseas, which we have a couple overseas listeners, there is massive wildfires emergent throughout the province. In Manitoba, where we're from, there's 102 last count, and that was a week ago, 102 forest fires in Manitoba, and the average that we have over the last 10 years is 77. So we have more fires, and we're not even in the hot season yet, as we're just entering that right now. It is a emergent situation in Manitoba. And in Winnipeg, you see refugees everywhere.
Yeah, it's been crazy. And so what's the total number of, somebody gave me a statistic yesterday, but the total number of evacuees at this point is what?
It's supposed to be eventually 17,000, but a lot of people stuck back there to protect their communities, and some people are just simply refusing to leave even though
Yeah.
they're in dangerous situations. So the last number that I've heard is 14,000.
Because somebody pointed out to me yesterday that there are only 15,000 hotel rooms in the province.
You couldn't pick a worse time to try to block a bunch of hotel rooms in Winnipeg. Because you've got all these other things that are happening, and many of those things very expensive. People have planned them for a long time. I just got an email about a conference that is looking at canceling because of refugees that are now in that hotel. It's just a it's a very it's stressed Winnipeg very highly, but you can imagine the stressful situation of all those people who have facing losing all of everything they own.
So what are the odds that in the same week that the wildfire situation truly gets out of control? It was bad the week before, but in the same week that the premiers gather with Prime Minister Mark Carney in Saskatoon to discuss projects of national significance to be expedited, that these two events would overlap. So ostensibly, several provinces, I mean, mostly Alberta and Saskatchewan, want to build oil and gas pipelines. Almost nobody else wants to, but that is the entirety of the focus of their projects of national significance. And so, I understand why they would want pipelines built. Like, we're not turning off the spigot for oil and gas tomorrow, and it is a much safer way of transporting these products to market. But at the same time, doesn't somebody have to step in at some point and kind of put their foot down and say, "Hey, listen, you know what? We got to do less of this. We got to do something, you know?"
Those forces, I'm not sure, have any space in that room other than maybe the occasional premier who maybe has a kind of consciousness or guilt of some kind, or as has a significant member within their cabinet that is dedicated to the environment. I think that everybody knows that the economy has to be of central importance in fighting Trump. But the solution won't always be just pipeline the heck out of everything, because a lot of these things are also motivated by the fact that Danielle Smith in Alberta is facing such massive scandals. And some of this pipeline debate or desire for pipeline, it's very politically favorable. It's something in which you can use as a smokescreen, and you can continually say, we need this because of the desperation, or we feed the economy, or we are the basis for Canada's economy. But then also you can sharpen your knives against provincial premiers next door in BC who don't want these projects, and you can say, well, it's the radical left, it's the woke left, it's those things, and you can then shield from your personal scandals in the legislature surrounding firings of employees for political purposes. That's Danielle Smith's motivation. Lee. I mean, I think that she's always looking out for economy, but she's also looking to smokescreen from crises that she's dealing with at home.
Smokescreen. Very well played, my friend. Very well played.
Oh, I think these things out months in
Yeah,
advance.
no doubt. It's again, I can envision an argument building pipelines because oil and gas will continue to move, like it will continue to be a product in demand for decades. Although obviously it should be in declining demand if we do everything else right. The part that got me was her demands. I don't know if you saw her social media post with her offer that the prime minister couldn't refuse, which is it's always good in negotiation, intergovernmental relations and negotiation, to cite the Godfather as the as the
Next thing you know, there'll be a horse's head somewhere.
well played, Premier Smith. No, it's her demand that the government remove legislation to cap carbon emissions from the oil and gas sector and other uses of oil and gas. So the only way that Alberta's oil patch survives is if the oil and gas companies continue to invest in technology infrastructure that reduces its carbon footprint. In the end, it's kind of pointless because you can put as much lipstick as you want on an oil well, but it's still an oil well. But still, that's Trumpian, to roll back regulations on emissions when we know, how does she think the government treasury is going to survive billions upon billions of dollars in annual costs to fight natural disasters and weather events related to climate change? I guess you do that from royalties from the sale of oil and gas, but I don't know.
Or you say to yourself, I won't be premier anymore when that happens, and generally I don't care. I care solely about the what's in front of me or in my mandate, or I mean I'm trying to be more positive in that she's thinking about the immediacy of what's in front of her, as opposed to, oh, this is going to be something that's 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line. I mean, climate change is happening immediately, and that you only have to look into Fort McMurray just a few years ago to see the
Jasper,
massive
yep.
fires. Jasper. I was in Kelowna, which is right next door, just a few years ago, where the massive wildfires just engulfed, caused billions of dollars of insurance damage. And I guess the issue is you just don't care, maybe, or you care only about. I mean, she has a t propensity of making up crises that don't exist. And what I mean is that she believes in conspiracy theories, and perhaps she thinks that climate change isn't real. And there's a definite evidence that if she thinks that people are having below waist surgeries that don't even exist under the age of 18, then it'd be not that far of a rock to throw that she would think that climate change is a hoax.
Yeah, I mean, you were right, though, to reference the using it as a distraction from other events. I think that's what she's doing with separatism, you know, the idea of some, you know, a referendum on some sort of sovereignty association, which, by the way, if they held, I don't think would pass.
It's a pie in the sky. It's impossible. I've written this now far too many times. I've been writing more about Alberta in my columns than I've been writing about Manitoba,
Oh, good Lord.
because it's just such an absurd premise that Alberta thinks they would just suddenly inherit the lands that they're standing on, that Canada would A, give that up, and B, the treaties would not just re return the land to First Nations. I mean, it's a preposterous claim. You know, all of these premiers, and I think that every premier, but particularly in Alberta, might want to take a look at what's happening in BC and Ontario when they try to fast track these projects, these resource projects, and they can all day say that it's in their political interest, their citizens' goals, they have a mandate, whatever it might be. I just wrote up in my newsletter about the cacophony of decades and decades. The allies have been the Union of BC Chiefs and the British Columbia government. BC wants to push forward a bill that will fast track development of projects in the provincial interest, has created a massive schism in that relationship. Or this week in Ontario, on Doug Ford passed Bill 5, which is for the purposes of the Ring of Fire, and shut down debate of one of the MPPs in the Ontario legislature, Saul Mamasqua, sorry, who's an NDP MPP, but it's First Nations. He stood up in the legislature, said the premier is speaking untruths about the he's the word untruths, and was tossed out of the legislature for refusing to re revoke that word. That he didn't call him a liar, he didn't call him any other name. He just said the premier is speaking untruths, and so that created a cacophony of not only attention on Bill 5, which had already been protested, but now you could not discuss anything in the legislature. It was flooded with First Nations protesters, and now people are using terms like diplomacy is over. We're not going to in any way participate in consultation, and therefore the Canada's constitution will not be able to be fulfilled, the duty to consult. So you can say all day that you want to get these projects done, but like provincial premiers seem to be just living in a fantasy world from BC to Alberta to Ontario, by thinking they can fast track these things and then just avoid conflict or ignore major stakeholders or rights holders like First Nations.
Yep.
It's almost like we're seeing this huge step backwards of what has been a fairly building process of trust over the past 10 years with First Nations in Canada, and also I think with Canadians believing in government that there's a kind of a national interest or a consideration of climate change in the sensibility within major government offices, and just it's almost like there's. It's just conspiracy theories are running the day, kind of not just in right-wing premiers, but also even in NDP premiers.
Yep. Well, you know, you've by your own admission, have more or less ignored events in Manitoba over the last little while in favor of, you know, beating, you know, Premier Daniel Smith with a stick in your columns. But hey, back here in Manitoba, you may know, the Progressive Conservative Party of Manitoba, the official opposition in the Manitoba legislature, they have a new leader.
And a pretty interesting pick, in that I think everybody knew that Abhi Khan was going to become the leader of the opposition, the head of the Conservative Party. Certainly had a high profile within the last provincial election campaign, was on a lot of billboards. But I think that there would be reason to wonder is if in conservative corners of the province that they would be ready for an Islamic man, a small business owner who's from the city as opposed to the rural area, a person who has a fairly long track record of doing a lot of things in philanthropy corners of the city and the province that may be at times not always in the center of the conservative movement in Manitoba. And I think that's a it's a bold pick for sure.
Wild card. But it's also it's interesting though, like the timing, the spring leadership convention. I mean, really, Abhi didn't outline a lot of distinct positions during the leadership campaign. His opponent, Wally Dodridge, outlined a lot of distinct ideas. That pretty firmly established that he was on the far right-hand side of the spectrum of the PC Party of Manitoba. And as seems to be the PC Party's way, the end result was somewhat controversial in that they had a point system awarded to on a riding-by-riding basis. To prevent one or two like a membership sales in one or two ridings from completely deciding the race. Anyways, the end result is Abhi got the most points, but Wally got the most votes. I don't think that delegitimizes what Abhi's leadership, but I think it's a bit of a burden and to carry coming through. And I think as well. And that's why, like, the main reason we're talking about Abhi Khan is because today, in this episode of Negan and the Lone Ranger, Abhi Khan does his first long form interview as leader of the PC party. And I will tell you, without giving away all the good stuff, he's going to be very honest about his role in the election, where he became the spokesperson for parental rights. Very interesting backstory there. And just, I will say without a shred of reluctance, just, kind of an interesting guy when you find out about his formative years in Ottawa before, most of us know he became a big time star in the Canadian Football League. I will tell you as a bit of a tease, when he was drafted into the CFL, he got a signing bonus.
Now, for those of you who don't know the CFL, if you're listening from far away, is not a lot of money.
A CFL sized signing bonus, and it was dedicated to an extremely noble cause. That's all I'll say. And you know what else too is really exciting before we get to the interview is that we, I think, are the first province in the history of the country to have a premier and a leader of the official opposition who are both easily identifiable just by their first names. Wob V. Abhi.
The headlines write itself.
Yeah, it would be, kind of like I don't know, Cher versus Elvis. You know what I mean? Like instantly recognizable.
Well, far be it for me to point out the obvious as well, but it also is a very notable to have a man from an Islamic tradition facing off against a First Nations, like First Nations premier of a Canadian province. Like that alone is just an interesting dynamic. It's indicative of, I don't want to give a Trudeauian kind of phrase, but it is 2025.
Yeah, I thought we had an agreement that his name shall not be mentioned, right? That we
We have a
like,
few of those actually. So I get confused as who shan't be named.
that's right. Well, there's someone who's very close to the Lone Ranger who we agreed shall not be named.
Yes, of
But,
course.
no, I mean, I think we can And as a matter of fact, I think we probably should do a Trudeau legacy, the good, the bad, and the ugly, the sort of Sergio
Just like we needed time from the podcast, we probably need some distance to get the
Leone.
perspective on that one. But what an exciting, good job on you. This was not an easy interview to organize for the busy schedule of the opposition leader. And of course, you're in the midst of some investigative work that is taking up a lot of your time. But you pinned the interview down. Very exciting. And for Manitobans, I think this is a real gift because a lot of Manitobans don't know who Abhi Khan is, and this is an opportunity for him to share in his real-time voice and in the massive platform that we are of getting his message out. I think he needs to do that. That's the most important thing, I think, when you're introducing yourself to a province, is to come unfiltered.
Absolutely. So without further ado, here is Progressive Conservative Party of Manitoba leader Abhi
Is this your first podcast? You're among friends.
Yeah, no, it's first of all, thanks for having me, Dan. It's the
Yeah.
first podcast with you.
Okay.
No, I've done a few other podcasts in my time. So I'm getting more and more podcasts now, and they're when I downloaded your podcast last week,
Oh, geez. And you kept the appointment, right?
And I did. No, I listened to three of them. There's actually some good stuff on there. So I'm looking forward to this. Actually, there's some good stuff.
You know what? But honestly, it's exactly the same way we talk about the podcast. But it's great to have you. And I'm kind of embarrassed to say, on behalf of the Free Press, we've never really told people who you are, even though, like, we've had, football player, entrepreneur, politician.
Yeah.
We should have found our motivation to tell people a little bit more, but we haven't. Like, do you find, maybe not just the Free Press, that people know who you are, but they don't really know who you are?
Oh, for sure. I think that's the life of either a football player or a public figure or being a politician, right? Like, people think they know who I am, but do they really know who I am? And for the most part, they kind of got bits and pieces of me. So I'm usually relatively okay with them knowing those bits and pieces, but a deep dive into who I am, no, I don't think anyone's ever really done that. There might be some tissues we have to pull out and get going on that. But, for the most part, people do know who I am. And again, for the most part, it's usually pretty positive. So
yeah.
I'm always open and welcome to that. And it's an honor. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy. Like,
yeah.
I really just think I'm just a normal person.
Officially, I can tell you, you're no longer just a guy. Like, you've finally done it. You've
No.
crossed over into a sphere where being just a guy, it's going to be a lot harder, let's say, to be a guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like people say, you're really tall, Abhi. And I actually don't think I'm tall. Like, I'm 6'4", but I actually just think I'm a normal height person. And
yeah.
then I only realize it when I see myself in a picture with somebody. Like, if you look at the PC caucus picture, it's hilarious. Lauren Stone standing there. I don't know who depicted that, but the MLA from Midland, and she's 5 foot tall, and they put her next to the 6'4" guy. And I'm like, holy macaroni, I am tall. But it's the same thing when people come up to me at, like, Costco, or if I'm shopping, or I'm out with my kid, and they're like, are you Abhi Khan? And I'm like, well, is that a good thing or a bad thing for us in my opening? But
it
I'm like,
can
I'm
go either way, as I found. Yeah.
And I honestly, truly just believe I'm just a guy.
You know, we had a chat before we did the interview, and I thought one of the most interesting moments is, I kind of said to you, that like how long have you harbored political ambitions? And which led into a very interesting conversation about how you were never supposed to be a football player
yeah.
or a politician.
Yes.
You were supposed to be an actor.
Or a doctor.
But performing arts was, as a young you, that was your early passion.
Yeah. I love sports and I love just being the outgoing, gregarious guy. But really, it was drama and it was music and it was arts and it was performing. I really enjoyed that. And my dreams were quickly crushed in high school by my father, rest in peace. Maybe we'll talk about him. But he's as a good East Indian father said, nope, you are going to the school behind our house. You're not going to Canterbury School of Performing Arts, and you are going to become a doctor. And that was the end of it.
And somehow you got lost on the way to med school, though.
And then when I was drafted, fast forward 10 years later, the number one pick by the Ottawa Redblacks, my dad still said to me when I got drafted that night, you should have been a doctor. I played in CFL for 10 years, and it was always, you should have been a doctor.
Yeah.
And then I'm elected official, and I've said this about my mom. My father passed away in 2008, but, becoming an MLA, should have been a doctor. Minister, she came here and she's really happy and amazing, right? Like,
yeah.
he Punjabi East Indian kid from immigrant family. Mom says, Dad would be really proud, but he would have been prouder if you were a doctor. Now I'm the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party. And my mom, I swear to you, Dan, still said, should have been a doctor.
When are you doing med school at night? Basically.
Yep.
So it's interesting, though, that you're, I played football in high school.
Okay.
So I know how this works. But even you never even initially aspired to play football, but you managed to, you bumped into the coach in the hallway at your school one day.
Barry Armstrong, literally walking after Mrs. Scrappitz had cut me from the drama improv tryout. And literally was walking down, like, he goes, you're a big kid. And I said, oh, okay. And grade 9, high school, right? You don't know anyone. He says, you ever played football? I said, no. He said, come try out for the football team. I said, I've never played. He goes, we'll teach you. And literally that was the start of my football journey.
When did you realize that football could be, at least for part of your life, it could be a career?
A career? Not till it was a career. Really, like maybe senior year. Again, when you go through the stuff and you live in the moment, like when you're living in the moment, you don't actually know you're in the moment.
Right.
Because you're living in the moment, right? So that's why I say I'm just a guy in politics. Like, yes, I'm the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party. Yes, I'm an MLA. It's a huge honor for me, but I'm just living in the moment. So I'm just me. So but football was the same thing. I actually didn't know I was that good until someone really told me I was that good, and I got worked out for the NFL and CFL. So
you played in the Shrine Game.
Yeah, I played in the East-West Shrine Bowl, which was a huge honor.
Just to explain to people who don't know what that is.
Yeah, so the East-West Shrine Game is the second tier, the second best all-star game in the States. So it's all graduating, you know, college players, you know, Michigan, Notre Dame, Purdue, you know, Washington, like everyone. And they invite two Canadians, one from the East Coast, one from the West Coast. And I was invited from the West Coast because I went to school of Simon Fraser University. And so I was like, oh my, okay, maybe I am really good. You know, and people had won some awards and this and that, but you just don't really think of, I don't think about it because I'm, again, living in the moment. Funny story on that, going way back to high school again, there were coaches at that time that I wanted to go to play for Michigan. Like it was just, you know, Ontario boy right across the border, Wolverines. And, they said, you're not good enough to play. Like you're not good enough to play Division
NCAA.
One. NCAA. You're not good enough to play Division One. I was, you know, good in school. I had 90 plus average. He says, just go to school. Like, you're not good enough, was the message. And I went to another team the next year, and they said the same thing. And then fast forward 5 years later, I'm lined up against a guy from Michigan, from Notre Dame. The guy to my right is from Purdue. You know, you got Florida State, and I'm sitting here as a Canadian kid, Simon Fraser University, only brown kid, Punjabi kid on the team. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, wow. And I'm here. I made it. And 60,000 fans in San Francisco playing in that game was pretty cool.
Wow. So, okay. So football, you did spend some time with the Red Blacks.
Yep.
And this is, we're going to go back. You started playing the CFL 2004, yep, I believe. And, but also, you were the second overall pick in the draft. And I understand there was a pretty lucrative, payoff for the,
massive. So I was sitting in Vancouver, Simon Fraser University, all the college buddies are around, and you get a phone call at, like, I don't know what time it was in the morning. Joe Pow Pow, congratulations. You know, you're picked by Ottawa. And that was the day we had to refresh the internet, right? So you're sitting there in 2003 going, refresh, refresh, refresh. And then my name shows up, and then I got a phone call. So we signed the contract, and it was a $7,000 signing bonus, a really big $7,000 signing bonus for the number two pick overall.
Well, and as I understand it, that signing bonus did ultimately go to a noble purpose.
It did. You know, family's very close, very important to us, and signed. And my dad said, you know, congratulations, all that stuff. And he says, okay, where's your signing bonus check? So I said, here it is. He literally took the whole thing and said, we're sending it to your uncle in Pakistan so they can buy a tractor for the farm. Because, you know, we have family that live off the land there, and we have a mango farm and a sugar cane, and they live off the land. So he says, they need an upgrade to the tractor, so we're going to send it. All right. And you know, you don't argue with your father. You say, okay, Dad, whatever you say, and it's gone.
Yeah. So what did your father do for a career?
So yeah, so my father was a very successful, before they emigrated to Canada in 1978. I was born here in 80 in Ottawa. Worked for a bank. He was like a regional manager for a bunch of banks. Came to Canada and set start all over. And then by the time he retired, he worked in the Jean Chrétien government as a civil servant in the finance department. So it's a huge honor for my dad to go from, you know, a newcomer to Canada with two suitcases and two kids, and then three other kids were born here, to you know, work, and that was real. And my dad had a few meet run-ins with you know, Jean Chrétien when he was prime minister, and that's quite the honor.
For those of you who are playing 2 degree of separation political bingo at home, I would have thought it took many, like, more degrees to connect you to Jean Chrétien, but yeah. Apparently,
just my dad.
Yeah. Did you ever get any perspective on government or politics from,
no.
from your dad?
No. I mean, maybe politics when it came to like large families and communities. My dad was a community leader, you know, in Ottawa, very well known within the Muslim community there, established in various mosques, and he did a lot of volunteer work with other organizations. So I wouldn't say it was the political orientation. It was always the community service. It was always like giving back to community, feeding people, helping people of all, like, and that was kind of like interesting, right? Because we grew up in the 80s, 90s where, you know, it's a very different world than it is in Canada than it is now. And he really, really impressed that upon us as kids. Always get out and help. Always get out and do stuff. So it's the community aspect of it. Yeah. And it was never politics. And for me, even politics wasn't a real thing until 3.5 years ago.
So anybody who makes a living, even for a short time in the CFL, I mean, that's a tough gig.
It's millions and millions and millions of dollars that we never, ever see. It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
You do it for the passion of the game. Like, you're a kid. You're young. You're kind of stupid. And you just want to play. Like, you love the game, right? Like, I loved the game because, you know, thank God I was good at the game. I loved working out. I love the teammates. I love the camaraderie and the battle on the gridiron. Like, love that aspect of the game. And then as you get older and you know, your body breaks down, and I've had 9 major surgeries. Major. Like, any one of these 9 would have ended a rational human being's career. But because I got hit in the head too many times, I'm like, let's keep going. But, you know, you love the game in the CFL.
You played 8-9 seasons, which in football player years is like a 50-year career, pretty much.
The average career is 3 years.
And in the CFL, even kind of shorter in some respects.
Yeah.
It's amazing, but with the U.S. college system and now the Canadian university system, there's so many more players than there are roster spots.
Yeah.
It's I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but it does kind of seem like you guys are cannon fodder.
Oh, 100% we're cannon fodder, but we know we're cannon fodder. Like, you know you're going into, okay, I'm going to get launched off today, right? And they're always looking to replace. It's a business, too. They're always looking to replace you, younger, you know, cheaper, less injuries. And then there's the veteran aspect, which also plays important. But that's why the average career is less than 3 years, because you're not making a lot of money in the CFL. So if you're making 40, 50 grand and you're killing your body and you realize I'm never going to go anywhere, you're usually gone within a year or two.
Yeah.
Like, on your own accord, you're gone. Then the guys that want to continue to ballot it out, and then, you know, you can continue to stay, and you can get up to 100,000, 150,000 on the top end in my time, 100 grand. But, you know, you are always looking to be replaced, and that's the tough part.
So I'm going to make a long story short, but 8-9 seasons, CFL, you get traded to Winnipeg. You win a bunch of awards, including 1 year you were the most outstanding lineman in the country. And then 2012, it's time to hang them up while you can still walk upright.
Not barely.
Then Winnipeggers got to know you as Abhi Khan, the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Again, did you always dream of being a restaurateur?
Never, never. Everything will go back to, I'm supposed to be a doctor, you know, or an actor, but that actor was, you know, crushed pretty quickly. I have a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology and Biology. I was on my way, to, you know, literally to med school, and then I got sidetracked with football, and there's lots of other stories with Cal Murphy, you know, the late Cal Murphy, may rest in peace, came out to work me up from the NFL with Indianapolis Colts, and I was flying. There's lots of stories along the way, but, you know, when I retired from football, I was retiring, it was, you know, your career is coming to an end. By year 7, 8, 9, your body's, again, 4 knee surgeries, back surgery, shoulder, concussions, 5 hand surgeries. Okay, I should tie it up. And I was kind of thinking, what do I do next? Can I go to med school? Really?
Sure.
It was actually like,
no, for sure.
Yeah. I actually was looking to do my MBA at that time. And I said, okay, then, you know, should I go work for somebody? What do you do? The worst part about playing in the CFL was, what do you put on your resume for the last 10 years? Professional CFL football? Well, what else do you have? Like, you know, you're going to be 30 plus years old and you're looking to get into the workforce. And this is actually a real sad story for a lot of professional athletes, or even like junior players that, you know, think they're going to go, is what do they do after? It's tough. Like, it's a real, like, oh my God. Am I going to work sales and start off at 40 grand?
Because you're in your early 30s at this point. Yeah.
In your early 30s, and a kid was just born. You're like, what am I going to do? So, larger than football, though, is I really love the community. Mm-hmm. So, I was really well known for an offensive lineman, for a fat guy who snaps the football. Like, I was pretty well known. Like, it's shocking, right? Like, people are like, that's Abhi Khan. I guess it helps there's no one that really looks like me walking around.
I think it's actually your name. Nigan and I were talking about this before, but Abhi is kind of like Cher.
Yeah.
You know, like you say Abhi and like, so, and I mean that like, seriously. Like,
I get the Cher reference all the time. And it's a made up name too. That's like, no one knows.
Well, who first called you Abhi?
No idea. Like, no, my mom calls it to me, my dad, like, siblings, everyone, nobody knows.
So it was before football, somebody
way started, before football. So my oldest friend goes back to grade two, Carlos Orlando, and I still keep in touch with him every now and then. And I've asked him and Nalawi and a couple other guys, and they're like, Abhi, we have no idea where, like, that was just your name. But like, my mom, dad, everybody calls me, no idea where it came from. It's made up. It's not even a real name. Like, do you know another Abhi?
No, but like, you know, respect. I mean, that's like to your credit, right? Like, it's...
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting time. We've got a Wav and an Abhi.
Yeah, Wav. Right?
But you guys are instantly, like, everybody knows who you're talking about.
It was, I don't even know where we're going on this. I got sidetracked, sorry.
No, that's okay. It's your podcast episode, so go wherever you want.
Like, yeah. So I was going with the football thing. So, you know, when I was coming to an end, I said, well, people know me. You know, I think I did a polling at the time. I think it was like 8 out of 10 people liked me at the time. It was a made up poll. I just asked 10 friends and 8 of them said they liked me. So I said, cool. And I said, you know what? Maybe there's something I can do. People know me. They recognize me. Maybe I can do something. And the plan was, if I can do some sort of business, people will come to me. They'll give me that first crack at it because I've earned that trust with them, right? I've earned that relationship with them. They'll say, let's go see. So then it was, what do I do? Restaurants, clothing, you know, do I get into some sort of service provider? But if you did service, then they're coming to Abhi for the service. And I didn't want that because then you can't grow that,
right?
Because there's only one person, right? Like, if you're a lawyer, it's fantastic, but they're coming for you. If you're a barber, that's you. So ultimately, I landed on shawarma restaurants, and the idea was to expand them and grow and grow and grow. And we did that up until COVID. And it was, let's just open it. People will come. And if the food is amazing, they will come again.
Yeah.
But I can at least get them in the door with that name and that brand.
Full disclosure, horrible conflict of interest. I've eaten a lot of shawarma con.
It's not a conflict. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not embarrassed to say it. I just want to get that out in the open in case somebody says, hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
With your football profile and then your profile as an entrepreneur, typically that's the kind of person who ultimately is recruited or courted for politics.
Yeah.
In this particular instance, that's not exactly how it happened.
No. I mean, I was involved in like various boards and the community initiatives and just trying to grow down. My focus was really downtown Winnipeg, right? I had my first store in the Exchange and I was just kind of engaged that way, right? Spoke at city council a few times and just some like parking issues and safety issues back in, you know, mid 2010s. And that was really it. Like there was no political on the horizon. I knew of people and, you know, Winnipeg's a small town. Everyone knows everyone through 1 or 2 degrees of separation, but I was never actually really recruited to. It was, you know, being involved in the Winnipeg Chamber and just seeing how things kind of worked and kind of being like, okay, what's happening here? And then COVID struck. Mm. And I was really like, as a younger guy, like, you know, mid 30s, late 30s and business and kid, I said, what the heck is going on here? Like, and I thought I was at that time kind of like the guy. Like, I know people. Mm-hmm. I should be able to pick up the phone and call people and get and find out what's happening and advocate for businesses. And like the downtown was like, it was just like blindsided by this thing and devastated. Like I'm still struggling to recover from those business wise. And we've sold off a few of them and closing them down now just because of where I'm at politically now. But that was kind of like, what is going on? Something needs to change. I need to get involved somehow. Got a young kid, you know, and I was like, what do I do? And that's kind of where it started.
You know, when someone makes the jump into politics, I wouldn't say that everybody takes into account every possible way it's going to affect their lives. But did you know enough people in it who could help you prepare for the seismic shock to your nervous system that comes from sudden? And this is kind of what I meant by you're no longer just the, you know, a guy. You know, now all of a sudden you're on the hot seat, you're at the, you know, the tip of the spear, whatever you want to sort of say, but you're in it.
Yeah, no. And I definitely did not. And if anyone told me anything, you just kind of dismiss it because you don't know it until you know it, right? So people can say, oh, it's going to be tough. It's going to be crazy. It's going to be long hours. People are going to say this. But until you experience it, you don't know what it is, right? In all aspects of life, whether it's parenthood, right? And you got a kid, oh, it's going to be amazing. It's also going to be, you know, painful and hard, sleepless nights. You don't know until you have that kid.
Right.
Same thing with business. Same thing with politics. Same thing with football. Like, you don't know what it's like until you actually smash that first guy sitting across from you. And it just happens to be 6'9" Doug Brown, who just kicks my butt over and over again. And
because if you had said it, you kicked his butt, I'd have to reach out to him for comment, right?
Well, so. Probably he's still 6'9". I'm still 6'4", so he probably still could kick my butt. One of the greatest guys I've ever played with, and friend. But you don't know what it's like until you do it, right? So people can warn you all you want and they say things, but also when you're just getting into it, no one's going to tell you the bad.
No
one's going to scare you away and say, oh, you're going to get this and you're going to get accosted here and people are going to ask. And I still didn't understand the scope of it, right? Like, I didn't know that what I say is going to really have an impact. Like, words really matter. But on the football field, like, you know, interviews would be like, yeah, we lost the game. We sucked. We need to get better. And we're sorry to the fans. Like, that's the reality. And you don't care because you're going to get up the next day and go have a football job and work out and do better. Politics is, I didn't realize that at first. And I realized that pretty painfully the first couple of times I did interviews and the first couple of times I actually, you know, put out statements or whatever. I was like, every single word mattered. And that was a real shock to me. It still is a shock to me.
I don't know. Maybe it helped. Maybe it didn't help. But you're coming in by election 2022 on the positive side of the equation, you're running in what is, you know, theoretically pretty safe. Yep. Conservative seat. On the other hand, you're also running to replace Premier Brian Pallister. Yeah. Who left office in what's the appropriate word? There was a bit of a cloud over him when he left. The pandemic response, he'd been criticized. So, like, did you, in the Fort White by-election, did you pretty much get a lay of the land, like sort of some of the broader dynamics of the Manitoba electorate at that time?
No, not at all. Again, you just don't know, right? So, and again, I didn't really know the significance of Brian. Like, you do, you know the premier, you know what he's done, you know who he is. But to me, I was just like, I'm just the guy in the community that knows people and people know me and I want to do good. So give me the chance to do good and let me go forward with that, right? And that was really like the pitch, was like going knocking on doors and talking to people. But again, you're right, a very different riding, a very different area. Lived there for a few years. And then also, let's not forget, I was up against one of the greatest CFL players of all time who actually won Grey Cups, not like me who lost 3 Grey Cups. Willie Reeves, great guy, you know, and I've known him for years before that. And we text message and I see him at autograph signing still. And I'm running up against this guy.
And he's a firecracker.
Yeah.
You know, like he was quite an energetic would be the, yeah, probably the best word for, yeah, candidate.
Yeah. Totally. And it just seems to be who I run against these days. Like, just someone like that. So, you know, and that was like, oh my goodness. And then there was also the nomination before that though. Like, so then I thought going into this, like, oh, okay, I'm the shoe-in guy. Like, they should just give me this. But I didn't know what a nomination really meant. Just give me the seat, let me go rock and roll, and, you know, we'll win and we'll go forward. It was like, no, I had to go through the nomination. I had to sell memberships. I had to go knock on doors. And that was like, wow, this is a grind. And it's been a grind, and I've done 4 elections since then in 3 years.
You've definitely been thrown into the calendar at an odd time. So, you know, you just win a by-election, you get into the ledge, you get a cabinet position. So now all of a sudden your time is, you know, spread across even more responsibilities. And then it's into a general election, challenging general election. How are you and your family dealing with the, like, in less than 24 months, your, yeah, life has turned completely upside down?
Yeah, it was wild. Like, and you're right. So, like, if we back up just a tiny bit, like, it's also like, it's not like, oh, hey, congratulations, you have a new job. It's like, and, you know, you can get a job as, you know, working in any department or industry and pick it up. Like, okay, this is the trades job, or this is the sales job or management. This is like, you're in a legislature now. Like, what does that mean? What is a bill, a petition, a debate, a resolution? What is ringing of the bells? What is the chamber? What is caucus? I remember my first meeting I went to, and they're using all these acronyms, and I'm like, so then they asked me a question, and I'm sitting there with, this is where in government, you know, the Heather Stephenson's the premier, and I'm sitting at the cabinet table, all the ministers are there, and I'm like, so I bring in, this is a funny story, so as a rookie in the CFL, it's a tradition, you always have to bring donuts for everybody the day before a game. So I brought in 4 dozen donuts or 5 dozen donuts for the group, and MLAs are you know, they're happier than a pig in.
Because in donuts.
Because they got free food. Yeah, right. Pig and donuts. So they loved it. But I'm sitting there going, I have no idea what they're talking about. Like, I literally don't have a, other than like the basic English words of there, you know, and hello.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? So it's drinking from a fire hose that's bigger than you could ever imagine. And that was like 6 months or something. Then it's like, okay, now you're a minister. It's like, oh my. And then you have all this staff. So it's just constant like bombardment of information and events, like learning. So, you know, what did that do to my family? So, you know, I have a one son. He's 12 years old now. So at the time, what, he was nine?
Yeah.
You know, and his mom and I have a great relationship, and we have support with his grandparents, and I have a great group of friends and support network. And my son's just the, I mean, I'm biased. Obviously, he's the best kid in the world. He's very supportive, very encouraged, and I've always booked off time. So the good thing about being in MLA is when I have my kid, I'm with my kid.
Yeah.
And when I'm not, I'm working 24 hours. So I'm working to late. And that was actually added a lot of flexibility in my personal life aspect. And then I have a real good group of friends and support around that as well. But it is wild. Like, wow.
2023 election campaign. You guys are in tough.
Yeah.
By way of quick review, particularly in Winnipeg, PC Party is struggling for support. The campaign itself becomes arguably one of the more controversial campaigns. Like, there are two big issues that that probably you need to talk about. You know, one is the we're not going to search the landfill.
Yeah.
And second is parental rights. Yeah. So tell me about, when did you first learn about we're not going to search the landfill as a major messaging in the campaign?
Yeah, so I'll back up again, just a little bit more context before that. So again, being there for 2 years, I think at the time, you're learning how things go. First general election, because before it was my campaign and my riding, right? So you're very much involved in everything. And that, and the CEO of my restaurants, like, you want to change the menu price, you're involved in everything, recipes. This was very, I've never been part of something like this. It was, you know, decisions were being made by the campaign team and whatever that circle looked like. And we, at most times as MLAs and the PC, would know about them when the public knew about them. Mm-hmm. Like, there wasn't really this, actually there wasn't a conversation.
Internal that, briefing.
No, it was very different. And again, I didn't know. So I thought, this is normal. This is how they must all run. This is like, you have your campaign team, they got their information and resources, they go out and do it, and this is the kind of the thing, and you just focus on your writing and your messaging and your writing, which again, I built that community of, you know, knocking on doors and being out and people knowing me, but that was just my one writing. So it was very, when to answer your question, it was really driving down McGilvery to work, and they got that digital billboard right by the Mercedes dealership and the, by the train tracks, and you look up and you see it and you're like, whoa, okay, this is where we're going. And then you make some phone calls and, hey, what's happening here? What's going on? And they're like, that's just that it is what it is. And you, what do? Like, I, you know, again, being the new guy here, it's, this is just, this is how it's done. And you go forward, you know, now I'm the leader now. Things are going to be very different the way I'm running things, but that's how I literally found out about the science.
And what was your, I mean, you know, having been in government for a couple of years through the early volatile stages of the debate about whether to search the landfill, what was your first reaction? And looking back on it now, like, how do you feel about it as a, like, a major plank in the campaign?
Looking back at it now, or even at the time, like, just a heartfelt apology now. Like, even at the time, like, wow, what is going on? Like, what are we doing here? Where is this coming from? Why are we doing this? Why are we using this as an issue? But seeing the damage that it's done, seeing that, you know, the divide it's created and the anger, and rightfully so, to use that is, you know, I've said it before, I'll say it again on your podcast, you know, unequivocal apology to the family, and larger than the family, like the entire province of Manitoba, anyone affected by this is, and I'm trying to, you know, as my leadership style goes and who I am in the community, people kind of knew me, right? And they're like, this doesn't vibe with Abby. Like, what's going on here? If I can talk in third person for that instance.
No, for sure.
So, you know, apologies. Just shock, like, really, like, this is, you know, come on, we're progressive conservatives, like, finances, economy, great tax savings, progressive. For families, progressiveness, right, inclusivity, like, these are, you know, you look at our cabinet at the time, and, you know, you got John Reyes and Audrey Gordon, you got, you know, guys from rural Manitoba and women, like, it's a great, you know, so it's just, I was really shocked is the word for it.
Yeah, so there was no feedback, like, other members of your caucus team at that time, you know, have written and talked about this, but there was no feedback loop on this stuff.
No, it was very different. It was very like insular, I guess, or silos, right? And go win your riding. Go win your riding was the message. Do whatever you got to do. Win your riding. This is for the general message for the province. And, you know, I know we had a lot of internal conversations with MLAs, but, you know, if you're on, you know, this is your one cog in the organization, mm-hmm. right? And you're sitting there going, where's my place in all of this? How do I do this? And that was one of the reasons why I decided to run for leader was the main cog is the one that can change the direction of a ship.
Yeah.
Right? There's all these other parts that go in it, but I said, if I'm going to be part of something, I got to change it.
The other sort of controversial plank in the campaign was one that you were asked to be directly involved in. So it was social media, television, radio, billboard ads proclaiming the PC Party of Manitoba is the party of parental rights. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, you and I have discussed this and the nuances of it, but how was it explained to you and how have you come to view that messaging now?
Yeah, I mean, we can do a whole podcast just, and I think we should maybe, if you want, if you have me the honor of coming back on, I would love to.
Hey,
we
can get three times you get a t-shirt. So, you know,
yes. I just want to really tight on the arms, though.
Yeah, don't worry. We have gun-friendly.
You know, but I think, you know, respectfully, I think both of these issues and many more deserve a real in-depth conversation. But that one there was, you know, again, the phone call came in and said, hey, we're thinking about this. We're pulling on this. We're hearing this. What do you think? And I said, yeah, as a father, I love my kid more than anything. Immediately you go to those thoughts, right? You say, I'll do whatever I can for my kid. I want to be involved in everything for my kid. Like, this makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. Like, I of course, like what parents don't want to know what's happening and be involved in all aspects of their child's life. So I said, yeah, great. Like, let's do it. What do we do? And that was where the conversation was. We had a couple more phone call conversations and an in-person meeting and saying, this is where, you know, we want to say that parents have a right to be involved and parents need to know what's kids and kids have healthier outcomes with that. You know, the Education Act hasn't been updated in 30 years. So all of these things make sense to me.
Yeah.
And I think to people listening, it actually, yeah, you're right when it's pitched that way and you say, okay, let's go rock and roll.
So the other, and I mean, part of this comes as well from, I interviewed Marnie Larkin, the campaign manager. So I'm pretty sure that this is a reasonable interpretation, but the term parental rights is also a bit of a dog whistle.
Yeah.
And it's associated with pretty extreme movement in the United States and parts of Canada to eliminate certain materials from schools and libraries, you know, to prevent what these activists believe is kind of the creeping influence of the LGBTQ community. So I'm going to say, and I think this came in strongly when we talked about it before, that wasn't the first thing that came to your mind, but it was also not, nobody prepared you for the fact that that's what you were wading into.
Yeah. I and people will believe me or not believe me on this. And I just say, you know, what's the indicator of what you're saying today is look at your past, right? And so what I've done in this province and my time, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I really like, I was, and I apologize. I did not know the parental rights was a dog whistle. I legitimately was like, yes, parents should be involved in all aspects of their kids' life. Like this is a right. I believe as a father, we should all want parents to be involved. And to me, it was just like, it makes sense. Like you want to be involved. Like, let's go, let's do this. And then it wasn't until afterwards. It wasn't until much afterwards that I was aware of this and people were talking to me about this. And it was kind of like one of those aha moments. You're sitting there going, oh man, you know, to me, it was, how do you, and anyone listening or any parent says you want the best for your child no matter what. And what is the best for your child? Well, it's having involvement from everyone, right? Yeah. It's like as the parent, but also as the teacher, as the counselor, as the friends, as the neighbors, as the stakeholders, as the experts. We want the best. And that's really where I came from this at was we want the best for that child in all situations. Like I didn't segment this into one or two segments. It was like, whether it's bullying or, you know, sexual exploitation online or social media or bad grades. Like, you know, some kids are afraid to take I'm one of those kids. If I took a B or C
Coming out of the pandemic, the worst parts of the pandemic, I mean, education was a mess.
It was a total. So it was like, yeah, we want to protect, like this should be for all children. Let's make a whole encompassing thing. So my really was like, this is for everyone. This is a great, like to me, it was like, woohoo, this is amazing. And I still firmly believe in, and that's where I want to go with this. And that was always the intent of it. Now, what I realized again at the time is you're part of this massive machine. You're just rolling in this thing, right? And you don't have the opportunity because I'm not the leader at the time. I was a minister, but I was minister for 6 months before the new guy in politics. And you're just kind of rolling with the punches as they go. You know, I think it's a reflection. If you look at the riding of Fort White, like I beat Willard by only 197 votes, like in just a year earlier. a year and a half earlier, really close. Then I went on to win by 1,400 during all of this. So how did I in that time? Because people knew me in that riding. Mm. I would go knock on doors and they say, Abhi, what is this? And I would talk to them and say, okay, that's what we thought of you. Okay, you have our vote, right?
Yeah.
And so it was that relationship, that community. I said, okay, now I have the opportunity to really do that on another level.
Looking back now, I mean, when I did the interview with Marnie Larkin, what she said was, it was a deliberate strategy to keep the party at a competitive level of seats. So the feeling was that unless they threw a few, you know, bones to the farther right part of the party, that they could be vulnerable in allegedly safe seats outside the city. Now, whether or not that turned out to be true, you guys did maintain a very, you know, 20 plus seats in the legislature, so very credible source. Is now that you're leading the party though, and you're still fielding questions about it, mm-hmm. was that was that a price that it was okay to pay? Was it, yeah. Are you satisfied that that's what they did now? Or do you wish you had taken a different approach?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't involved in that data and the numbers and the polling. Like I never saw any of that stuff, right? We just kind of went with what was told to us and we just went with the punches. And we just went forward with what the plan was. I mean, I would say, and this is really one of my main reasons for running for leader was me as a person and we as a progressive conservative party can do so much better with our messaging, being effective communicators with Manitobans and talking about it, right? I think that, the message you and I have just discussed now, and I've done many times on the parental rights campaign and parents' involvement in children's lives. I think anyone listening, I would say, yeah, that makes okay. I get you. Like Wab Kanoo actually said the exact same thing on a CBC interview. He said, parents have a right to know. I'll never get in the way of a parent's understanding. He said the exact same thing. He just messaged it differently. Right. And so to me, it's like that. And so I said, well, how do I do that? Well, you got to take over the party. You got to be the guy running the party now. Right. If you want to be involved, you got to be at the table to make decisions. But now I have the opportunity and an honor and blessing to be the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party. So that's where I want to take the party. Right. And I think that was really what was kind of lost. And not just in that campaign throughout my time of 3 years in politics, but also now I'm looking back at history and reading and seeing other provinces and countries. You're like, what are they messaging? What is their message? What is their goal? How are they going to? And that's lost now. And it's sad.
Say what you mean.
Yeah, yeah. Say what you mean. And it's actually lost. Like it's mm-hmm. people don't care about that. Like, sorry, the listeners care about that, but the people coming up with it don't, right? They're just like, let's just get this hot thing out there and go from there. I have a very different stance on that. And that's why, I want to do these podcasts. I want to get my free mm-hmm. t-shirt and two more podcasts. I want to, get out and meet as many people as I can to share that message with them. And then you let them vote. But if I look back at that, the harm that was caused in various aspects of that campaign was never my intent. I don't think it was, a lot of our intent, if not everyone's intent. Yeah, it's politics and yeah, it's winning seats, but there's the human aspect of it and there's the Manitoban aspect mm-hmm. of it that I think needs to supersede everything. And, I think that being the leader now for a few weeks with a few of the stuff I've done here signals how I want to go forward.
If you do appear two more times, because we've said this often, three times you get a t-shirt, we're actually going to have t-shirts made. Right.
So you're saying no one's ever done the podcast three times? Is that what I'm hearing?
No, they have. Unfortunately, there are several people who've been promised t-shirts. We just haven't got around to making them. But as that community grows,
yeah.
the pressure on us to make t-shirts grows as
it's
well.
Immense.
So, but we will, with your busy schedule, we will try to get you on again. It was a little bit of work to get here, but thank you very much.
Yeah.
And, and I also, the other request I had was, I know like a lot of restaurants, you're operating on shorter hours,
yeah.
but I can't have shawarma Khan for dinner unless you're open a little bit later. So if you could, maybe can I text you on a particular night and say, could you stay open a little later?
You know what? We can make anything happen. Right? I might want a hat then. If you're going to throw a t-shirt, I want a hat for that compromise.
Yeah, but something tells me I'm going to end up on a pamphlet for shawarma Khan.
Yeah, big endorsement for shawarma. Like, Dan, that supports me. Yeah. Like, he supports the restaurant, but I'm getting the vibe you're breaking up with me right now. Like the interview is coming to an end.
No. I just think we need a break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're not breaking up. We just need a break.
I've heard that before numerous times. Yeah. Really, like, it's great to chat with you. It's great to get to, hopefully Manitobans will listen to this and get a bit more of who I am. And, I know we want to dive down into more issues and more serious issues and real, topics and policies. Yep. And I welcome those conversations. you know, I guess it's just literally like the breakup. Like we're walking out of the restaurant right now.
No, not exactly. Although, like if your guy throws something at you because you've gone
No, he's fine.
Final thoughts.
Final thoughts are like it's an absolute honor for me to be where I'm at, and I've really got into this world like of politics to serve. Like, and I think we started off with my father ties in, you know, just the upbringing of community and service and listening, helping where you can. You know, we grew up in a very middle class, like. Family, you know, again, father came with two suitcases, started at the bottom and worked his way up. And so much so that the football, I couldn't afford a pair. My parents couldn't afford a pair of cleats for me when I started playing football. I had to get them from my friend Carlos. I mentioned his brother gave me them to play football. I mean, and that's where I've come from. And I continue to work to serve, you know, people of all. And that's why I got involved in politics, was really like, listen, and, you know, for any of the hurt or the damage that's been caused throughout the time. And, you know, I apologize for that. It was never my intent. My intent is always to work for a better Manitoba for everyone. We're going to disagree on certain things, and that's okay. Like, and I've said this even within our party, right? Like, I went through this leadership. We didn't even talk about that. The leadership race itself.
Part two. Yeah.
You know, it's okay to disagree. Like, it's actually, I think it's healthy to disagree. It's healthy to have that conversation on what's your view, what's my view, what's our ultimate view. And if we keep it always as, you know, we want to make the province better, whether you're NDP or Liberal or Independent or my opponent running against me in the leadership race or myself, what's our ultimate goal? How do we move forward to making Manitoba better? And I strive to keep that top of mind every single day. Might not come across that way sometimes in question period, but my job is to, you know, get answers and work for a better Manitoba. And that's what I'm honored to do.
Abhi, thank you very much. Thank you very much to Adam Glynn and the team at CJNU for production, and to Paul Simin and Wendy Sawatsky and the others who managed to get the podcast from recording device into the interweb. And yes, and thank you to my partner Nigan Sinclair, who will be more present in the next episode. Thank you very much for listening.